Now I'm joined once again by the chairman of Redytown Museum, Mike Davis. So great to see you again, Mike. How are you?
Lovely. I'm fine, thanks. Good to see you as well.
Now, last time you were here, you were looking at Southend, of specifically how the town became the resort we know today. And, of course, the history of the pier. Now, in truth, until I'd looked into the history of the town, I had no idea just how much history there was to uncover. So what aspects are you going to be looking at today?
Well, Scotty, indeed, as you've said, we looked at some depth at the pier, but we haven't touched on either what was at one time another of the town's major attractions, the Kurzel, or the fact that the town boasts its own airport. So I thought that both of these deserve some more attention.
Well, absolutely. And last time you made a brief reference to some of the attractions at the Kurzel, but you're obviously going to be going into a little more detail today, yeah?
Yes, indeed, Scott. Well, the Kurzel, the name in actual fact is German in origin, meaning a public room in a health resort or an amusement park, and probably had its heyday in the 1950s, but more of that in a moment. The Kurzel first opened in 1901 as part of one of the world's first purpose-built amusement parks, and it is noted for the main building, which is a distinctive dome. At the time of its opening, the Kurzel hosted all manner of musical artists, and one of the great advertising slogans of the day was, "By the dome, it's known."
But it really? Wasn't. That was great.
Yes, that's a good advert. And, yeah. And almost amazingly, Scott, you can see an advert for that in the Redytown Museum.
Now there's a surprise.
Well, it wasn't always known as the Kurzel and was for a time known as the Lunar Park, with a host of attractions, including the Harton Scenic Railway, a figure of eight roller coaster, a miniature railway, Astley's Circus, and also a cinema. Almost unbelievably, they were attracting around 100,000 visitors a week. But then in June 1911, fire destroyed two of the park's most notable attractions, the Joy Wheel and the Figure of Eight Railway Coaster.
Right. So was it as a result of this that the name of the Kurzel was reinstated?
Yes, indeed, it was, Scott. The Lunar Park Company was dissolved in 1915, and an American industrialist by the name of Clifton J. Morehouse became the new owner, and it was he who reinstated the Kurzel name. He converted the circus into a ballroom and ice rink, leading the park to become one of the most successful in England at that time, establishing local sporting events and trade exhibitions. Now, I bet you don't know this, but in 1916, a zoo housing bears, tigers and wolves was opened on a 4-acre, that's 1.6 hectares, site, which had to be closed, however, following the outbreak of the Second World War. But during 1927, two Scotsmen, one named Jimmy Shand and the other Tom Wilson, approached Southend United Football Club, who played at the Kurzel, their pitch was right by the side of the water chute, by the way, and agreed a deal to start greyhound racing on the 27th of July. However, unfortunately, in 1929, 11 people were seriously injured on the flying boat ride.
Now, you mentioned the name Jimmy Shand. Is that the Jimmy Shand who used to have a band on the radio, do you know?
I'm not actually sure, no. I'm not actually sure. Before my time, Scott.
Sorry, I do remember it, though. But the heyday was yet to come, was it not?
Indeed, yes, you're right again. It was during the 1950s when, almost unbelievably, on Saturday evenings, over 500, yes, that's 500, coaches took visitors to the Kurzel. Indeed, one has to wonder where they all parked.
True.
But then, during the 1970s, the Kurzel made its name as Southend's prominent rock music venue, showcasing internationally successful artists such as Black Sabbath, Deep Purple, Thin Lizzy, Queen and AC/DC. But unfortunately, all things must change, and by the end of 1977, the decision was made to close the ballroom. Incidentally, it had a sprung floor, which was claimed to be one of the best in the country for dancing. Wow. And the main building finally succumbed in 1986. The outdoor amusement area was later redeveloped for housing. Although a multi-million pound redevelopment attempt was made by the Roellen Group, it was short-lived, and by 2020, there was almost nothing left.
That's awfully sad, because, you know, the Curzon was a place, well, I think we all used to go to, certainly in the days of my youth. And so let's, why don't we move on to the airport? And that too's had a bit of a checkered history, is it not?
Absolutely. In actual fact, Scott, the first airfield in this country opened in South Fanbridge in 1909, the same year that two men from Lee tested their monoplanes on the same site of the airport. During August Bank Holiday in 1912, somebody called Claude Graham White landed a hydroplane in front of a large crowd just west of the pier. And by 1920, the Southend Seaplane and Pleasure Trip Company offered regular flights for a short time to such places as Rochester, Clacton and Margate. Then, with the advent of the First World War, the airfield was established by the Royal Flying Corps to be taken over by the Royal Naval Air Service in 1915, renaming it as RFC Rochford. It was designated as a night fighter station, and many sorties were flown against Zeppelin air raiders, including the LZ-38, on the 31st of May 1915. After the war, the airport was closed and reverted to farmland, although for a short period in the early 1920s, pleasure flights were provided for visitors to the seafront. For a short time during the early 1930s, daring enthusiasts raced across the turf at Southend Airport in home-built aircraft consisting of nothing more substantial than wire and plywood, and they were dubbed the Flying Fleas, and they would risk their necks for a few seconds airborne above hand-built craft using no more than motorcycle engines. Unsurprisingly, following a long chapter of accidents, this era came to an abrupt end when insurance companies refused to insure participants against third-party risks. So it was then in 1933 when Southend Borough Council bought the land. The airport was officially opened as a municipal airport on the 18th of September 1935, only to be requisitioned by the Air Ministry at the outbreak of World War II under the name RAF Rochford, becoming a base for fighter squadrons.
Just briefly going back to flying fleas, etc., I can't imagine what health and safety would have made of that. Can you imagine?
Absolutely. They just wouldn't even take off the ground, would they?
No. Anyway, what happened after the war came to an end?
Well, in actual fact, in the 1950s, three new runways were added, enabling commercial flights for passengers and cargo. And once again, almost unbelievably, during the 1960s, Southend became the third busiest airport in the United Kingdom.
What, even after sort of places like Heathrow and Gatwick?
Absolutely. That
incredible.
Just shows you, absolutely. In 1954, a very, very well-known name to many people, Freddie Laker launched his Channel Airbridge from Southend Airport.
Now, were those the flights that used to you could take your car on board?
They were indeed. The front of the...
Yep.
In actual fact, Scott, in 1968, I took my first ever flight in an aeroplane from Southend Airport, a day trip to Ostend, £6 return.
Impressive.
Unbelievable. But unfortunately, by the end of February 1972, Channel Airways, which had its hub and headquarters at Southend, ceased operations, and the airport's decline accelerated as jet aircraft were unable to use the runway due to its short length and the church at the end of the runway.
But things started to look better with the change in the century, did they not?
They did indeed. These airport people are fairly resilient, you know. Indeed,
just as well.
Indeed, as in 2008, the airport was bought by the Stobart Group for £21 million, becoming part of the Stobart Air Division of the Stobart Group, which also operated Carlisle Airport, where they originated.
Mm-hmm.
2 years later, Stobart took out a £100 million loan, partly to fund the airport construction. a replacement air traffic control tower became operational on the 21st of March 2011, followed by the return of year-round daily passenger services. For example, the 27th of March 2011, when Air Arran commenced services to Galway and Waterford in Ireland, always popular. That same year, EasyJet announced a 10-year agreement with Stobart, and in April 2012 commenced around 70 flights per week from Southend using three Airbus A319 aircraft, which were based at the airport, flying to eight European destinations. EasyJet's operation at the airport increased to 16 destinations, and in the summer of 2018, they based a fourth aircraft at Southend, an Airbus A320. A new on-site railway station opened on the 18th of July 2011, although the official opening was actually on the 21st of September that year, with a new road being opened on the 1st of September 2011, replacing Eastridgeby Lane that lay in the path required for the runway extension.
And then, unfortunately, more recently, things appear to have gone downhill again.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, Scott, sadly, the airport has yet failed to fully recover from the disruption resulting from the COVID situation, which did in actual fact force owners to borrow £125 million from Carlisle Global. Subsequently, Carlisle asserted that Eskin, formerly Stobart's, had broken the terms of a loan and demanded the return of £200 million. What amazing sort of money that is.
Mm.
Consequently, Carlisle Global took an 82.5% stake in the airport, with Eskin holding the remaining 17.5%. The deal came just days after additional EasyJet flights were announced that would be starting during the peak summer this year.
So how do you see things developing in the near future? Do you think it's possible?
Well, I'm always an optimist, Scott. Mm-hmm. Carlisle have indicated plans for an instant injection of £5 million with a further £27 million to follow. Nevertheless, Carlisle are venture capitalists, say they will certainly want to try and re-establish interest in the airport with airlines to look at or other options, although commercial tourist flights remain the preferred option. What would help is if an operator such as EasyJet, Ryanair or Wizz were to operate as Southend as a home base. Flights would then be far more popular morning departure times, and with the convenience of the airport, this would be a key selling point. I certainly hope so. But Scott, if I can tell you just between the two of us something in confidence.
Yeah, go on.
Go on, as long as nobody... the pub is just about to reopen in May at the airport, called the Navigator. And I can tell you that discussions are currently ongoing, and I hope that we'll have some good news on some really positive news in the next month or two.
What, with regard to airline
possibilities? Yes, and more flights and such like. Fingers crossed.
Oh, let's hope so. Anyway, Mike, thank you very much indeed for all of that. And I'm sure before you go, you're going to be able to give us a few tips about forthcoming attractions at the Rayleigh Town Museum. So go on.
Indeed.
I've
just managed to save enough time for that, Scott. We have, as always, a full series of events in the museum. We've just finished a really, really popular Titanic exhibition, which was very popular. Can I give a few notes for your readers for the diary? On June the 9th, the town closes, the High Street closes, for our annual Trinity Fair. The museum is open and there's lots of exhibits in the High Street. During June, July and August, we have a major new schools exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
And also in July and part of August, I'm reintroducing our very popular Sunday morning heritage walks up and down Rayleigh High Street. Look at our website for details. And another last one for you, Scott. In September, we're having a three-day special exhibition of Essex-related maps with atlases, globes and some really excellent artefacts.
Sounds absolutely fantastic. And have you given any thoughts to what you might talk about next time that you come in?
Well, I think that, Scott, one of the things we haven't spoken about yet are some of the religions in Rayleigh, such as the Peculiar People, the Celestial Church of Christ, what the prisoner of war soldiers did for their religious needs during World War II. And I can talk about John Wesley from the Wesleyan movement, and I can talk about, and you wouldn't believe this, Scott, but Rayleigh was once described in 1797 by the Reverend James Pilkington as a den of iniquity.
Oh,
disgraceful.
How did he come up with that one?
Well, he just arrived in Rayleigh and he decided to walk up and down Rayleigh High Street to get his bearings. And he did so on a Sunday morning and he found, I still don't believe this, some drunken women in the high street. And they hadn't come out the pink toothbrush.
Well, there you are. Never mind. All right. Well, thanks very much indeed for that, Mike. We look forward to hearing some more about that in your next outing here. Thanks a lot again.
Lovely. Thanks, Scott. Lovely.